Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I am very glad to be with you. And, you know, a lot going on in the world. And, of course, you know me, I'm going to try to find an expert to help us untangle this financial maze that, or navigate the maze. We don't really need to entangle a maze. Maybe you'll untangle, I don't know, think of a little kid who doesn't wash their hair and don't ever put conditioner in it and they don't brush it like they should and it's a mess. Well, that's sometimes the way this financial world feels and looks. So I've got a gentleman coming back to us who's been on the program before, trader and editor of the Ultimate Wealth Report, Sean Hyman. And Sean is he's just a financial guru. He's done a lot of things, has a lot of broad experience being not only a broker at Schwab, trading course instructor for foreign exchange, done financial writing for numerous outlets, does a lot of speaking, and has his newsletter you can take a look at over at theultimatewealthreport.com. And I like following Sean's work. He's got a lot of interesting commentary out there and, you know, some good perspective. And so I appreciate his time, and we'll get him on here right now. Sean, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's good to be with you.
Glad to have you back. And as the editor of the Ultimate Wealth Report, I know that you see a lot of things from your perch and perspective of keeping track of these things, monitoring the various government initiatives that we have seen unfold over the last several years or decades. And you've also seen some different trends that have been occurring both with currencies and commodities. And so I'm real curious to get your take on some of the trends we've seen of late with the different countries around the world, like China, for example, doing some of the things they've done with their currencies and the potential inclusion of their currency and some of the different currency baskets, and then also looking at what we're doing with our own dollar here in the United States with the Fed's actions and what's happened there. So weigh in, if you would, for us on what you've seen going on and some of the things that you think we need to be tuned into for what may come down the road.
Sure. Yeah, as it concerns China, I think they're slowly gaining prominence. You know, when we basically took over the world's reserve currency from the British pound, it wasn't a switch flipped. It was a process of time. And the U.S. just kept gaining prominence and confidence. And you know, more went from the British pound to the U.S. dollar. And I think we're in that phase now where confidence is going away from the U.S. dollar overall long-term and going towards places like China. And they're just doing a lot of things right. I mean, they're developing their economy. It's growing at a good clip. They've got a big trade surplus. They're very shrewd and smart with their money. They've got a 100-year plan. We can't even seem to get a 5-year plan going on here in the U.S. There's a lot of positives for China's yuan long-term and a lot of negatives for the U.S. dollar long-term.
Okay, so some of this recent strengthening of the dollar, which now, of course, at the time we're doing this program, Sean, you know, the dollar is starting to slip a little bit again. But we've seen some recent strength. Is that, in your view, more of a temporary thing? Is your view long-term for the dollar to kind of go into a tapering or an overall, not necessarily a sharp, but maybe a protracted decline over time?
Yes, my opinion, the dollar will continue its long-term downtrend. Even in downtrends, there's bear market bounces, bear market rallies up within that larger downtrend, and we've definitely just come through one of those. There's a good chance the dollar peaked in March, but it's a little too early to say for sure. But there's a lot of technical indications on the charts that seem to indicate that that may be the case. But what caused a lot of the dollar strength, in my opinion, was simply not how good it was here in the U.S., but how bad it was in Europe.
Okay.
And Europe had such woes for such a long time and still is battling some of that with their problems with Greece. But I think most of all that is now baked into the cake of the euro. And I think the euro is fully prepared whether there's a Greek exit or not. I do think that there probably won't be a Greek exit, that Germany or the EU, somebody there will bail them out so that, you know, they don't turn to somebody like Russia for help. And so I think that the euro has likely bottomed. They're economy over there is doing better overall with that lower euro that's been so low and for so long. And so it's giving a boost to their economy and is turning around. And so I think a lot of money is now wanting to move from the U.S. with our expensive stock market to Europe with a cheap euro and a less expensive stock market than what we've got here in the United States.
Well, we have seen this for 2015 through about halfway through the year. The European markets, many of them are up three times, four times what our market has been up year to, you know, through that halfway through the year. What do you make of that trend? Do you think that will continue? Is that part of what you're speaking to with that migration?
Yeah, absolutely. I think some of the big institutional money is making that switch now. They feel that the euro is likely bottomed. And anytime the euro gets that low for that long, which is unusual, but anytime that happens, it gives, in particular, Germany a big boost, which is a lot of the growth that comes out of the eurozone
Sure. Anyway. Oh, yeah.
And so that's a big benefit to it. So I think that a lot of institutions are thinking this weak euro is going to cause a lot of economic pickup in the future that's going to help Germany, help Europe. It's going to strengthen the euro, build confidence in it. It's going to take European stocks higher. They're also more fairly valued. They're at a lot lower price-earning ratios than we are here in the U.S. We're towards the high end, historically, of what our stocks trade at on a P.E. basis. And so it doesn't mean they've got to come crashing down tomorrow or next month or anything like that, but it does tell you that people that are putting new money to work in the S&P 500, Dow, and NASDAQ today are definitely taking much higher risks than well above average risk than the norm.
And is that, again, because people say, well, hey, wait a minute, I'm putting money in every month, or I do have part of my money going into a diversified portfolio, not just the S&P, but I am equity for part, and I'm spreading it around. Is that something that's more of a short-term issue in your mind, Sean, Are we okay if we look more of a long-term view of that, not just for short-term with that, the U.S. equity exposure?
Well, it depends on where somebody's viewpoint is. If they're 5 years from retirement, mm-hmm. then it should be a pretty good concern, because if we took a significant drop in the stock market, it may or may not make it back to these levels within that time. If you got 20 years to retirement, then I wouldn't even be concerned about it. But also too, if people are closer to retirement, or even they're younger and they want to invest more when stocks are low and not so high, they can still contribute the same amount of money to their 401ks and just reallocate a portion of that maybe over to like a money market or a stable value fund for a season of time, so that the money's still going in there and they're probably still getting matching from their companies, those that still do that anyway. And so they're still getting the benefit of tax-deferred dollars mm-hmm. going in, but it's not necessarily at risk in the market. And then allow the market to correct, a good bit and come back to fair valuations before putting new money to work. So that's, one thought process that somebody might follow, especially if they're just so many years away from retirement.
Yeah, and that's actually, and not just another way to kind of maybe be a little more, as the pundits would say, Sean, a little more granular with our analysis here, and that would be to speak to, how long before you need to use the money. Not necessarily, it could be that you could be in retirement drawing from other sources and have, already be retired and be 10 years away from drawing on investment monies, then that is a perspective you could also use. But you speak to a really, really sound couple of points that I really think we need to emphasize. One is the short-term use of equity dollars is a dangerous game, and or anything for that matter that's going to fluctuate in value. And then number two, you really make a strong argument for a diversified portfolio. And what I'd like to do is grab a quick break and come back and have you kind of give us your perspective, Sean, of what you would consider to be a diversified portfolio, especially in light of these currency wars that are going on, with everybody trying to, make their currencies competitive and help their export business and multinational companies. So hold right there, Sean. We'll be right back. UltimateWealthReport.com is Sean's website, and we'll be right back with Sean Hyman. Stay right there.
What if in the time it takes you to eat lunch, you could potentially strengthen your financial future? Would you invest 1 hour to plan stronger? Well, if you spend just 1 hour with certified financial planner David Holland, you'll get simple, straightforward advice to help you plan stronger. It's as simple as that. And if you already have a financial plan, isn't it worth an hour to get a second opinion? And there's no cost or obligation to meet with David. All you need to do is simply call 671-PLAN. That's 671-PLAN. Or visit planstronger.com for more information.
And we're back. Sean Hyman on the line, trader and editor of Ultimate Wealth Report and ultimatewealthreport.com. You can sign up for it. It's a free newsletter, right, Sean?
Well, Ultimate Wealth Report does cost, but it's usually runs around $49 a year for 12 monthly issues, and it also comes with weekly videos. So
okay,
it's
cool.
Very inexpensive.
No, that's close to free as you can get. No, I know that you've got some free material right on the site, but there's, of course, subscription. You got to pay for stuff if it's going to work for you. So I'm glad that you're making that service available. So talk to me about a diversified portfolio, because sometimes people say, hey, I got four stocks, I've got a diversified portfolio.
Yeah, a lot of people make the mistake of saying, they look back and say, what has performed well? Okay, that's what I'm going to put my money into. And that's really a bad way of doing some analysis. Really, what's been the story the last several years? The U.S. has been everything. The U.S. stock markets perform well. U.S. bond markets perform well. Most of the rest of the world has not done well, and that's the story in the nutshell. So what everybody still wants to do is put money almost exclusively in U.S. stocks and shun the rest of the world. But when that's been the story for several years, usually the tide begins to turn, and what you'll find is that the U.S. will either underperform or actually decline and be in negative territory, and a lot of the rest of the world that was shunned is now a beaten-down value.
Right.
Their foreign currencies that didn't perform well will now perform better. Their stock markets, their bond markets will perform better. And so it's probably better time now than ever to have some exposure to a European fund or an international markets fund or an emerging markets fund. Again, if you go emerging markets, make that a small allocation. Don't put a big chunk of your 401k in a developing market. But something that's broadly diversified throughout Europe, Asia, some international fund, definitely has a place in a lot of people's portfolios. Because one of the most aggressive, risky places you can be at this point in time is in the U.S. stock market overall. Now, with that said, I mean, we're invested in the stock market in the Ultimate Wealth Report, but we're buying value stocks that are turnaround plays that are deep-pocketed and have low PE valuations and things of that sort. So it's a totally different tune than what the rest of the market's singing.
Yeah, you're not just buying the buying spiders and calling it a day.
Right.
Well, I like the and then what we do with my firm, Sean. You and I have talked about this before. We are subscribing a lot to what you just described. I like having some Australia, and we've got some. We've got some exposure to China, the developing countries, Asia, the Asian Pacific Tigers. I like it. Only a couple areas where I get a little nervous when you get into international is we get into the Middle East for obvious reasons. And Latin America to me is a little, you gotta be very careful because you do have some potential political instability there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, going back to Australia just put out awesome employment numbers. They were triple the numbers expected. Unemployment ticked down. So that's definitely a place to consider as well.
Yeah, we got that report about 2 weeks ago and started trading on it. No, I'm just kidding, Sean. I'm kidding. No, but we do. And that, that actually makes the point is, unless you have, trading places, Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd, that movie, the report on the frozen orange juice concentrate futures contracts before it happens, the predictions about the agricultural output, unless you have insider information or, something like that, you do have to take the next best alternative, and that is to be diversified and not be loaded up on any one area. And I like those international places you talked about. And now talk to us a little bit, because I know this is another area that's a very important part of diversification for a lot of people. And you get some of this with where you decide to invest internationally, but talk to me a little bit about commodities. We are seeing some shifts there. So what? How is that involved with this currency war, and what kind of trends do you think we should expect with the commodities in particular?
Well, if the dollar's about to tip back over, or possibly already has, that's going to give a big boost to commodities. And commodities like oil and gold and silver and things of that sort, natural gas, they have been beaten down over the last several years. And so they're one of the few pockets of value that remain in the U.S. And so when a lot of institutions start moving out of high P.E. companies and rotating out into lower P.E. companies, some of the few names that are going to be left are going to be some of your big oil giants, some of your mm-hmm. big natural gas companies, some of your big gold stocks, and things of that sort. So it is going to be in the commodity-related area, and we're in a lot of those areas. And especially, like, if you go and look at some of the international overseas oil companies, like your BPs, your Totals, things of that sort, you've got oil companies with deep pockets, you've got recovering oil, and you've got dividend yields that are in the 4 to 6% range. So that's a great place, in my opinion, for somebody to be. They're paid to sit and wait very well with interest rates very low around the world, and central banks around the world are still cutting interest rates. New Zealand and South Korea did it last night.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you're just now getting that report? Okay, all right. No, I'm just kidding. No, you know, there has been certainly that downward pressure race to the bottom, and you know, it makes you wonder with some of these countries that they'll actually charge you for holding your money, you know. But, you know, with that, that definitely has had an impact on these currencies. And so, the thing that's interesting to me is about oil, of course, you know, because oil, even though I read this report the other day that was widely reported about, you know, now the United States is the number one, I guess, energy producer when you put oil and gas together. We still are very, very dependent on that price of oil, and it has such a huge impact on our economy. So if we do see a falling dollar, then those commodity prices rise inversely. So we could see oil going back to, $80 a barrel. I mean, it wasn't that long ago we were celebrating and dancing on tables for $40 a barrel oil, and there was talk of 30 or 10 and all that kind of nonsense, which I just didn't see happening. But, you know, now the trend's going definitely the other way, and that could be a real crimp on our economy.
It could, but, you know, right now with us being in the 60s, I think it's very, I don't think it's that big of a weight on our economy. Usually when we start getting to 100 plus, that's when it starts to become a pretty serious weight. And a lot of our big economic contractions have come between, you know, $100 and $115 barrel oil. Of course, that one shoot up to almost 150 was just kind of an anomaly, but that really crushed us.
That was a killer.
Yeah, so we struggle a lot economically. It's like a runner with ankle weights, you know, and they keep strapping heavier ankle weights on. The higher oil prices rise pretty much above $100 a barrel. But I think that we'll eventually see $100 a barrel again. And I think, by year end, we'll probably see $70, if not $80 a barrel crude oil.
I was expecting at least thinking that we could see, you know, that $70 to $80 range at some point. You know, now with all the build out of the infrastructure and the fracking and all of that stuff that could be brought back online. I know that some of that stuff has been capped off, but can be brought back online. That may help to prevent maybe getting out beyond that $100 a barrel. What do you think about that?
It could. If that happens, I know that the Mideast are definitely going to have to trim their budgets a lot if $100 a barrel oil is not to be anymore, because right now they wouldn't make their long-term budgets unless they return to about, you know, $90 to $100 a barrel oil. And, you know, when we think of the Mideast, a lot of times we think of the rich sheiks and stuff like that. But a lot of the Mideast is very poor and lives off of very little money because most of the money's concentrated to the upper echelon, the dictators that rule over there.
Yeah, really.
And so if oil does not return up, and they're not able to meet their budgets, that means they're not able to provide things to their people. And then you have something like an Arab Spring happen all over again. So I think it behooves them even to see a higher oil price long term. Again, near term, anything can happen. But long term, I think that it has to rise.
Okay. All right. Very, very interesting perspective, Sean. If you're just joining us, Sean Hyman's our guest today, trader and editor of Ultimate Wealth Report, ultimatewealthreport.com. Great newsletter over there to take a look at. Always good to get some insightful perspective from somebody like Sean. So we're glad to have him on the program. We'll grab a quick break. We'll come back and like to talk a little bit about gold and precious metals with Sean. He's got perspective there as well. Stay tuned.
Have you considered an annuity as part of your retirement plan? Did you know that over the past several years, Americans put trillions of dollars into annuities? But despite their popularity, many people aren't sure about annuities. Why? Because annuities have been attacked for decades by financial folks who offer competing products or services. A lot of money is at stake, so some financial firms who only offer investments don't want you to consider an annuity. Get the facts. Find out about this valuable financial resource. Call Holland Financial today and get your free copy of Annuities as Part of Your Retirement Plan at 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
All right, we are back with Sean Hyman. I kind of set it up there for you, Sean, about gold and precious metals, and I'd like to get your perspective from the ultimatewealthreport.com, and Sean's the editor of the Ultimate Wealth Report. So what do you think? Gold, for example, is a really easy one to talk about, and you know, for years, it seems like I've heard nothing but, hey, great buying opportunity. Gold's going to double any day. And it's still in that $1,200 range where it seems like it's been stuck for a long time. Are you expecting maybe some increase with this the waning dollar if the dollar does continue its downward trend?
Yeah, I do believe it will have another shot up. And, you know, it completed its downtrend, in my opinion, last November. And it's been in kind of a sideways basing range for the last number of months, but it keeps putting in higher lows. You know, like November was its ultimate low, and then in March it put in a higher low, and then so far in June it's put in a even higher low than March. And so I think it's building a lot of buying pressure. I think a lot of institutions are buying on those dips in anticipation of an eventual breakout. Right now, it's not clear to the masses that the dollar has turned, and again, it's no guarantee right now because it is too early to say for sure that the dollar has turned. But I believe that it's inevitable that it does, and then when it does, or even if it has, once it becomes more obvious that the dollar has turned, distinctly down, we'll see gold shoot up. And another observation too is that a lot of these metals made a major low together in March: silver, gold, platinum, et cetera. So the group as a whole seems to be moving overall upward ever since last March. And one more observation on it is that gold has been moving up in terms of a lot of other foreign currencies for months now. And so I think that it's just a matter of time before it fully moves up in dollar terms as well.
Okay. Well, the other thing, and I appreciate that perspective, Sean, because I've been wondering about, you know, gold and its movement and just seems to be, you know, kind of stuck where it's been. What about when we do see, and I know there are different opinions about this, and you may have a strong one, when the Fed does raise rates, which, you know, there's been a lot of talk about that, of course, everywhere you turn. And, you know, I personally don't think there's going to be some sort of series of quick rate increases. We might see a quarter point in the fall, just to remind everybody that the Fed can and will raise rates. But when we get to an actual real couple, three, however many rate increases where our interest rates do go up, that obviously has the potential, especially when you compare it to what the European banks are doing to lower their rates. Does that have the potential to offset some of that falling dollar? In other words, could that strengthen the dollar in the face of some of these other things?
Well, it could, but in a typical rate hiking cycle, you know, you start raising rates, and you see them raise rates fairly regularly, you know, every few months or so. And I don't think that's we're going to see a typical rate hiking cycle, and that's kind of like what you alluded to. I think it'll be more of a token rate hike, you know, mm-hmm. quarter of a point at some point, might be towards the end of the year, maybe earlier next year. Okay. And then I think a good number of months will pass before they hike again, you know, maybe another 6 months or something like that, because the economy is just still a little too fragile.
Agreed.
They're too worried about a stock market correction.
Yeah.
They're also worried about if they aggressively, you know, stepped on the pedal with interest rate hikes, that it could drive the dollar up too much, and that rising dollar alone could hurt some of the biggest companies' foreign earnings. and drive down the stocks in the S&P 500. So I think there's a lot of things they're looking at that they don't necessarily always tip their cards and tell us all about, but those are some of the things that are their concern.
A lot of the S&P 500 companies, these bigger, a lot of them multinational, a lot of their earnings come from overseas. The last time I looked, and you may have a more current number, Sean, is about 30% of revenues come from overseas. Is that still a good number?
Yeah, well, I've read some reports that even said it's 40%.
Okay.
So it's definitely somewhere, you know, between there at
least. So that's significant.
That's sizable.
Okay. And just for our listeners, when the dollar does fall in value, that can, you know, result for some of these companies in those foreign earnings being translated back to dollars, you know, and giving a higher profit in dollars.
Yeah, absolutely. What's really best for the S&P 500 overall is a declining dollar, rising foreign currencies. And so that way, when, you know, our U.S. companies do have a manufacturing plant in Europe and Asia and so forth, and those, their currencies are rising, when they make those profits there, like you say, turn them over to their U.S. books that had a declining dollar versus those currencies, it adds, you know, it's like a little turbocharge to the to the earnings. They earned even more in dollars than they did in those foreign currencies, and it gives a boost to their overall earnings, which boosts the stock price and is good for everybody. When the stock's flying, usually employment is very well, you know, so people are fully employed, et cetera. So that's generally better for the overall stock market.
All right. Well, I tell you, I appreciate the insight, Sean, and it's helpful to look at this from a lot of different angles. I tell people all the time that this is investing and planning for your financial future. It's three-dimensional to start, and then you got to think about going forward in time. That makes it four-dimensional, and you got to think about multiple eventualities that may unfold, and that makes it five dimensions. So thanks for joining me today in five dimensions. Sean Hyman, ladies and gentlemen, trader and editor of Ultimate Wealth Report, and the website. You can take a look at the newsletter, ultimatewealthreport.com. Sean, love to have you back, and we'll tackle another subject, and we'll keep tracking your articles and essays, and we appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.